We're about to have a conversation with Dariel Harris. Dariel Harris is the program officer of the Baltimore Food and Faith Project at the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future and joins us here in the studio. Dariel, welcome. Good to see you again. Good to see you in the studio.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
And they are working on this Good Food Toolkit and a series of conversations built around something we'll explore with and about green faith, and bringing congregations together to talk about the future of food and sustainability. But you know more about it than I do, so that was just the title, the intro.
Yeah, so we're doing what we have titled the Good Food Gatherings. And the Good Food Gatherings are a series of discussions, action-oriented discussions around the way we eat, the way we teach congregations about eating, the way we donate, and the way we act. The first one is going to be on eating well, and it's going to be a discussion that's geared around getting congregations to eat well. And by eating well, we mean to eat in a way that nourishes the body, that nourishes the soil that the food comes out of, and then also nourishes the farmers and other people in production that bring the food to us.
So just, we'll do this again at the end, but this first in a series of events you're having.
Right? Yes.
It's on April 10th at St. Luke Evangelical Lutheran Church, 7001 Harford Road.
Exactly.
7 o'clock. And Jennifer Ayers is speaking?
Yes, Dr. Jennifer Ayers.
And she is?
She is a professor of theology out of Emory University's School of Theology. She also authored a book called Good Food, where she talks about the food system, talks about where food comes from, and then also talks about different ways that congregations around the United States have participated in the food movement to get better food, better and more sustainable, more just food to their congregation and communities.
What has she proposed? What has she done? And I know you have this group of congregations that range through every denomination in Baltimore, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, across
exactly.
the faith.
Exactly.
But what will she be presenting in terms of an idea that Baltimore congregations can wrestle with?
Well, she'll be presenting the problem in layman's terms. So not everyone realizes that there is an issue. They don't understand why they should change their eating habits. So she'll be articulating what the problem is, and then she'll be pushing congregations in Baltimore to do certain things. It's very vast. It depends on who you are, what you can take on. But one of them is going to be planting gardens. Another will be shopping at the farmer's market, joining up for CSAs, doing workshops around food and educating the parishioners as to where food comes from, food justice, food sustainability, these sorts of things.
Get this to all these congregations, I mean, clearly is a huge task, but it also is, seems to me, strategically one of the key ways to kind of start addressing this whole question about how we both gain control of the food system and people can gain control of their lives in terms of the food they consume and how it's received and bought and the rest.
Exactly, exactly. Well, you know, the food system is going to be somewhat based upon our choices as consumers. Right. So if all the consumers started demanding organic food, then more people would find more organic food inside supermarkets. So now Walmart sells organic food. Costco now has organic produce in Costco. Right. Which is a testimony that there's a market for that. And therefore, Costco, Walmart, they want to make a bunch of money. So they go and fit that market demand. So by educating all these people, and congregations are everywhere, and people from different walks of life are going to different sorts of congregations for different reasons. But if you can educate all of them to say, we think that our food should be local. We think that our food should be healthy. We think that our food should be environmentally sustainable, environmentally conscious, should be friendly to the farmers and what people call fair trade, then you would see stores begin to shift in that direction more readily.
So tell me, for you, before we get into the specific issues you're going to raise in this whole series, and I know you have these very specific points you're going to be covering. I want to know what they are. I'm curious for you, and also for our listeners, many of whom are people of faith and go to the church and go to other institutions, synagogues and mosques, what's the connection for you between faith and food? What is that connection?
For me, I think that our faith informs everything that we do, every aspect of life.
Mm-hmm.
So my faith teaches me to love my neighbor and even love my enemy. So if someone comes and does something harmful to me, even though my immediate response may be to get even, to get back at them, but my faith tells me not to do that, right? So then I try to govern myself in that accord. Now, my faith also tells me that I shouldn't steal, right? My faith tells me that I'm supposed to take care of the earth. I'm supposed to be a steward of it.
And so if you're to push that further, I mean, I'm curious, is there something special and different, do you think, for you and the work you've done with rabbis, priests, ministers, imams about how they approach this in terms of the connection between faith and food?
Yes. Well, when we talk to faith leaders, we're trying to ask them the question of how does your faith govern your moral practices? And then we're trying to show a clear link between moral practices and the food system. So if my faith says, thou shalt not steal, I know I'm not supposed to steal. Yet most of the Hispanic workers who are working the farms today, I'm pretty much stealing from them. They're not being paid a minimum wage.
Right.
They're not being paid a livable wage. It's one step above slavery in many cases. My faith tells me I shouldn't do that. So now the trick is making the link between buying grapes from my neighborhood supermarket for $2 a pound and stealing from the immigrant farm worker who is living in deplorable conditions just so that I can pay $2 a pound for those grapes.
And that's very powerful. I think that making that connection can move people into thinking about things in different ways. So tell me about these the tenets that you're working on here. I understand there are kind of very specific ideas that you're talking about each one of these different...
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So for each gathering is going to be based off of our Good Food Toolkit that was developed some time ago, Angela Smith and others. The idea was to give congregations tools so that they can see how just the food that they served in their congregations were. So that's basically what the toolkit does. It asks you, when you serve food, is it local? Is it organic? Is it fair trade? And then as you go through the toolkit, you start solving these questions. You start answering these questions. Do you recycle? Do you compost? And then at the end, it tells you how well you measure. Well, the toolkit is broken down into four different sections. The first section is eating well. The second section is teaching well. The third section is donating well. And then the fourth section is acting well. So the Good Food gatherings are going to be based upon the outline of the Good Food toolkit. So the first one would be eating well, the second one teaching well, the third one donating well, and the fourth one acting well.
What do you expect to come out of this?
What we hope to come out of this initiative is that more congregations in the Baltimore area are aware of the dangers of the way we eat. We hope that they are motivated to take actions and informed upon what actions that they can take that can be meaningful.
We mentioned this to Reverend Heber Brown, who I know is involved in this. And the idea, if you thought about it, if congregations across the city actually kind of took over lots of land, a part of their own land, and began growing their own food with their congregation to distribute to their own people inside the congregation, how that could just, in a very dynamic way, change the equation.
That would make a significant difference. That would be huge if we could do that. And there's no reason why we can't do that.
I agree with you. I believe that.
Yeah, there's no reason why we can't do it. So it just needs leaders. It needs some leadership, and it needs some people in the different areas to work together. And they need motivation. So we're hoping that in these gatherings we can provide the motivation. Now the leadership we know is there because people from all these different faith groups are doing tremendous things in their respective communities. So we know that the ability to lead is there because we see all these nice churches and synagogues and mosques popping up all over the city, and those things take coordination.
We don't lack them in Baltimore. There's no lack of churches, synagogues, and temples and mosques in Baltimore.
Exactly. Trying to provide the motivation and to articulate the problem such that they know it's something that needs to be addressed.
Again, we want to make sure people get there. We're talking about this coming Thursday in the next week. This is Eating Well, right?
Yes.
Number one in a four-part speaker series, Good Food Gatherings, Interfaith Power and Light, and Baltimore Food Faith Project, putting this together. CLF has kind of helped give birth to this, Center for Livable Future. It'll be at St. Luke's Evangelical Lutheran Church, 7001 Harford Road, 7 to 9 p.m., and you'll be talking to Jennifer Ayers, who's Assistant Professor of Religious Education and Director of Religious Education at Emory University, author of the book Good Food, Grounded Practical Theology. I like that title.
Yes.
Healthy snacks provided while you're there.
Yes, yes, yes. And also there will be a man there named Elder C.W. Harris, who is the founder of Newborn Ministries. This is in Sandtown, Winchester.
Yeah,
they have a farm called the Strength to Love 2 Farm that right now has 6 hoop houses, but at the end I think they're planning on about 15, 16 hoop houses and an aquaponics portion right there.
Wow.
In Sandtown, Winchester. They hired ex-offenders who are now resident in Sandtown, Winchester to work the farm, and they partnered also with Big City Farm. So that's an example of a Baltimore homegrown initiative that is providing food to Baltimore residents, but then also not just food, but also economic incentives for people of Baltimore.
Be there. We'll have all the details at steinershow.org. This is an incredibly powerful and important series beginning now with Food and Faith. One of the men behind it clearly is leading this charge. Darrell Harris is with us. He's an engineer, he's a minister, he's a graduate of Morgan State University, and he's program officer of the Baltimore Food and Faith Project, the Johns Hopkins Center for Livable Future. Darrell, great to see you, and this is just the beginning. I look forward to working together and getting this out there and doing many more stories.
All right, thank you so much.